Talk sports, Fox Sports, you should check the box score. Bought a house in Concord adjacent to the golf course. Ben Lee, cut the mic off. Hey. You ain't sick, you just wanna take some time off. Hey, we talking Tennessee, we bleeding orange hair. We talking sports right up underneath the sun's fair. He got hot takes, Cody McClure. John Reed on the farm, walk around in manure. Hey, Fox Sports, Knoxville, 865. This is Talk Sports and we about to go live. Fox Sports, Knoxville, 865. This is Talk Sports and we about to go live. Ben Lee, cut the mic off.
Hour three, kicking off at Toyota Knoxville. We're taking your Hurricane Florence relief donations. New or gently used clothes, blankets. We need new, unused toiletries, uneaten food. Don't let that be used food. Let's have a unsealed box of non-perishable food. Bring it by right when you come into Toyota Knoxville. There's a donation box sitting to your left.
And something besides lima beans, for God's sake. I mean, I don't want to be picky. Like, if people are giving, they're giving, and that's an admirable thing.
Uh-huh.
But I remember when I was a kid and we would do, like, those Christmas food drives and stuff, and people would just bring all their canned vegetables they didn't like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I brought green beans all the time.
Yeah, like, bring them something decent, you know? Nobody wants to eat lima beans.
Hour three, headlines, Cody McClure, collision course, right now.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
The NCAA
sucks. Hate them. Crooks.
Indeed it does. Apparently considering a rule change in the wake of North Texas's punt return versus Arkansas. You recall the 90-yard punt return North Texas had on Saturday where the guy didn't call for the fair catch, but it kind of looked like he just stopped. You know, he caught it. He stopped. He didn't go anywhere. So all the Arkansas guys stopped, and then he kind of casually walked to his left and then sprinted up the sideline for a 90-yard touchdown. Well, according to ESPN, the NCAA is considering a change that would close any loophole that would allow a punt return similar to what happened in that game.
Well, when you saw it happen, my initial thought was, man, this is going to lead to somebody getting knocked out. Like, this is going to lead to, unless you're doing a full-on, hey, fair catch, stop, don't hit me. Like, your people are just going to start getting lit up. And quite frankly, they would have deserved it if, you know, that guy right there would have gotten lit up at full speed. On the other hand, like, what's the move? Like, if the guy doesn't start sprinting at full speed, you just blow the whistle? Like, if there's any type of hesitation, you blow the whistle? I don't understand how you close a loophole up unless you're just saying, hey, you have to two hands above your head call a fair catch.
I mean, I thought what the guy did Saturday was fair.
It was fair.
He didn't call for the fair catch. He just tricked him out, and the Arkansas players were dumb enough to, you know, they didn't tackle him. Which I guess in the moment, I don't know, are they dumb? I mean, in the moment, everybody kind of stops. You don't see him move. You're just kind of like, oh, I guess the play's dead.
Yeah, what I want to know is, did the player alert the ref to what was going to happen? Did the player say, "Hey, here's what's going to happen. I'm not calling a fair catch. Don't blow the whistle." Because you almost think the ref would blow the whistle there of just him not running.
Yeah,
and ruin the play, even though he didn't call it. But just assume, like, hey, you know, this seems. Did I miss a fair catch call?
I don't know. I'm sure there's. I'm sure they've asked him about that. I'm sure the North Texas media has probably asked the player about, you know, how the play happened and everything, but I don't know what he said, obviously, because who follows North Texas? You know what I mean? But that is an interesting question.
Like, how do they close? How do they put on closing this loophole, I guess, is my question.
That's a good question. Apparently, they're just considering it. Considering some sort of rule amendment.
Yeah, I mean, like I said,
I don't know how they do it.
Sounds good, but what do you do?
Yeah. Possibly as soon as this weekend, apparently. That's what Tommy Kraft of ESPN says.
Interesting.
That would allow to close any loophole allowing a punt return similar to that one. Be interested to follow along with that and see how and if and how they are able to do that. a group of Hall of Famers, the NFL, has threatened to boycott until the NFL provides insurance and salaries to them. In a letter sent to Commissioner Roger Goodell, the Players Association director and president, they said many high-profile pro Hall of Famers said they will not attend the annual induction ceremony until Hall of Famers receive health insurance and an annual salary that includes a share of league revenue. This letter apparently was obtained by ESPN. It was sent by Eric Dickerson. Several big names on it. Marcus Allen, Derek Brooks, Jim Brown, Earl Campbell, Marshall Faulk, Ricky Jackson, Joe Namath, Jerry Rice, Deion Sanders. You can go on and on and on. Reggie White's represented, Sarah White, Bruce Smith, Lawrence Taylor, Kurt Warner, Deion Sanders. So, yeah, so they want to get paid. We, the undersigned Pro Football Hall of Famers, were integral to the creation of the modern NFL, they said, which in 2017 generated $14 billion in revenue. But when the league enshrined us as the greatest ever to play America's most popular sport, they gave us a gold jacket, a bust, and a ring, and that was it. They talk about to build the game, they had to sacrifice their bodies. In many cases, we sacrificed our minds. We believe we deserve more. So they have written this letter to demand two things, health insurance and an annual salary for all Hall of Famers, including the share of league revenue.
Yeah, no real, I mean, okay. It's a good headline, I guess. I have nothing to add.
You don't have any thoughts on it? Whether or not they should receive an annual salary for the league they helped create?
I mean,
and sacrifice their body and minds for?
Yeah, I mean, like, what do you mean to say? Like, the NFL makes billions and billions and billions of dollars. Like,
maybe pay your Hall of Famers?
I would feel like the Hall of Famers feel like they were pretty much working for free as they helped create this billion-dollar organization. I'd be pretty salty.
They are the veterans of the NFL.
Yeah,
they should get paid.
I'd feel pretty salty of it. I don't know how much you pay them. Like, how big of a salary are they wanting?
Well, it doesn't specify from what I read. I just X'd off of it. But, I mean, at least give them, I don't know, give them $50,000 a year or something, you know? It's not a lot to ask, is it?
How many of them are there?
I read the big names to you. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know you read the names, but I didn't know, like, if it said
how many,
like 150 of them or 200, or I mean, that gets pretty expensive. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the pension, isn't that what the pension's supposed to be? Isn't the pension supposed to be like a salary every year?
I don't know. I mean, if you paid them, you know, pay them $50,000 a year times, what is that? You said 200 Hall of Famers? Does that come out to $10 million a year? They can handle that.
Yeah.
These guys built the game.
I mean.
The football coach at South Dakota State has apologized for running up the score in a 90-6 blowout victory on Saturday. South Dakota State coach John Stiegelmeyer.
Who are they playing?
Arkansas Pine Bluff.
I mean, they're in the South. They should have a better team than that. What the hell's wrong with them?
Pine Bluff, not exactly a place where you can recruit great players.
Not a recruiting hotbed.
No. South Dakota, it's in that flat Delta, Mississippi Delta, just awful place to live. But the South Dakota State coach John Stiegelmeyer has publicly apologized. He ran the score up 90-6 over Pine Bluff on Saturday. The Jackrabbits were up 49-6 at halftime. They scored 20 points in the third quarter and then another 20 in the fourth to light up the scoreboard. He said, "I'm disappointed in how I managed the game. I should have slowed it down earlier. I should have taken out all passes, and I should have been more respectful to our opponent. I apologize to Arkansas Pine Bluff and head coach Cedric Thomas. I'm excited about the young guys who were in there and made plays when given the opportunity, so you have to balance that. I think I could have been a better head football coach tonight," he said. Saturday night.
90-6 feels a little excessive, right?
I don't care anything about it.
Was he going for 100?
I think.
Because there was a part of me that, like, you know, Alabama could have easily gotten to 100 against Ole Miss. There was a part of me I would like to see it.
I would like to see it, too. And I think these coaches, I totally disagree. I think they're too respectful. It's a game. It's a game. What is all this, don't run the score up? I think you should keep scoring until somebody stops you. Like, I've never understood cutting it off. It's respectful, you know, what sportsmanship. The hell with sportsmanship. If they can't stop you, keep scoring.
I was respectful in my last Madden game.
Were you?
I was playing a good friend, playing my guy Jonah. He was off to a bad start. It was 28-0 at halftime. Second half, I just switched the tempo to 2 clock, and I kicked a field goal, and I had a touchdown at the end of the game. I got my running back. I just dove down the 6-yard line, just nailed it out. Yeah. I didn't need to run the score up anymore.
Nah, I don't do that. You keep scoring.
No, I was like, you know what? Because first of all, injuries are on, so I didn't want to play any more snaps. But at the same time, I was just like, let's 31-0's good enough. I don't need, me winning 45-0 just might hurt his feelings. I don't want to, you know, just be good sports about it.
I'm throwing deep, going for 2, and onside kicking. I want a coach like that. That's what I want in the game of football. Bring me that coach. That's the coach that'll beat Nick Saban.
Does it change if during this 90-6 blowout, the other team just gets so fed up, they start diving at people's knees and late hitting, trying to hurt them?
Well, at that point.
Because I do feel like at a certain point like that, if you're winning.
Oh, you open yourself up to the game getting nasty. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like at a certain point, like if for me, it would have been like at 70-6. At 70-6, I think at that point, if you'd have said this other team started cheap shotting the quarterback and cheap shotting players trying to hurt them, I think I would have said, you know what? You're kind of asking for it whenever you're running up the score. Is there anything to that? Would you have a problem if that was the case? Like if the team was just like, I'm tired of you embarrassing us, now we're going to hurt you.
Well, then if you start breaking the rules, then, you know, you get a lot of personal foul flags and ejected till next week. And, you know,
I swear we've had a story. I swear we've had a story about this happening in like AAU basketball or high school basketball.
Oh, I'm sure.
It led to fights and or gun threats. Like, hey, we're going to kill you after the game.
Hey, if that's what it comes to, that's just part of the game. I just think the whole sportsmanship thing is like, I can do without it. Everybody patting each other on the back and, you know, we're going to cut it off here. We beat you pretty good today. No, I want it to be 97-0. That's what I want in football. That would be perfect for me. Speaking of...
I feel like at a certain point, if you start cheap-shotting those players, you're getting what you asked for. Did you see this thing with Millie? Did you see this thing with Millie Bobby Brown? Have you seen this thing?
No. What's going on with the Stranger Things chick?
Right. Well, she was at the Emmys thing last night, right? Emmys were doing their thing. And she's talking about how she's texting Drake all the time and how Drake gives her advice in her dating life.
Isn't she like 13?
Yeah, she's 14.
14 now?
Like, I feel like this is a headline worth discussing. Did you see the news Drake made last week? Where he shut down a restaurant to have a private dinner with a Instagram model who was 18, who he reportedly has had his eye on for 2 years.
Oh, so what
like,
you're saying
like they had been friends since she was 16, and then when I guess when she turned 18, that was okay
now's
to
the
now,
time.
Now start dating her. I'm asking if this is a pattern of bad behavior that we should be addressing seriously.
Well, a lot of...
I don't feel like he should be texting a 14-year-old.
I mean, that happens with a lot of musicians. I mean, that goes back all the way to Elvis.
I mean, Jerry Seinfeld did it, too. Like, yeah. I don't think it's just musicians. Jerry Seinfeld, wasn't he 38 dating, like, a 17-year-old?
Probably, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty common thing, you know, in the celebrity world.
I feel like we shouldn't make it uncommon.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You think everybody should be, like... Who's the tennis player with the ugly wife? Federer, right?
Yeah.
You think everybody should just be like Federer?
Kind of.
I mean, when you're rich and successful and famous and you got a lot of money and you can kind of get whoever you want at that point, right?
Like this is during this
I mean,
is
you
during
should probably wait till they're 18.
Like this was during. I feel like this is. I mean, I feel like with the whole culture change we're supposed to be having with the Me Too and all these creeps, like, yeah, like this right here, Shoshana Lonstein Gross was dating Jerry Seinfeld while he was doing the show. Seinfeld, he was 38 and she was 17.
Yeah.
And they just went to parties together.
Well,
and
at that time, it wasn't as unacceptable. You know, what was that, the 90s? In the 90s are a long time ago culturally. I mean, think back to, I mean, you can go back even further than that, like back in the, you know, earlier 1900s, like it was.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like, that's the thing about societies, it's supposed to evolve.
Well, yeah, it evolves, right. But, I mean, this is not like something that, it's not a new thing. You know?
1993, yeah, Jerry Seinfeld was dating a 17-year-old.
You read some of those Elvis stories. Elvis had a big problem with that. Mick Jagger did too. I mean, the Stones, obviously. I'm sure the Beatles did. I mean, that's just a, you know, Little Richard, Chuck Berry did that too. I don't know. When all those girls are screaming for you, man.
Oh,
I mean,
shut up.
No, I mean, with the musicians, they're all like, seriously.
Yeah,
they're screaming in the crowd.
I like still that. Think it's creepy. Yeah,
well, yeah, well, I mean, know it may be creepy. I'm just saying.
No, I knew what you meant by the screaming for you thing. I'm saying
I wasn't trying to be. Yeah.
No, it's. I feel like you're doing your best to try to normalize this behavior just by saying, people have always done it. I feel like we're supposed to evolve. I feel like it's really creepy that this girl is 14 years old and saying Drake's texting me love advice, dating advice. Like, I feel like that's weird.
It's not as bad as Pete Townsend's thing. I won't get into that.
Let's just go to break. It's Talk Sports on Fox Sports Knoxville.
The days are...
.546-8200 is the McKinney Team hotline number if you want to weigh in on Florida. If you want to do... and give your thoughts on anything else, we're open. We're open for business. Appreciate Toyota Knoxville for having us out.
I discovered something a few minutes ago, and I'm a little bit depressed, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The cafeteria here at Toyota Knoxville does not have baked spaghetti today.
Well, when you were excited about that yesterday, I wanted to say, like, I doubt they have the same thing on the menu every day.
Well, I guess the last two times we've been here were on a Wednesday. Because the ladies told me they do that on Wednesdays.
Do they remember you and say, hey, Cody?
No, they didn't.
Do you ever come here when we're not doing a remote to get lunch?
No. Oh, come on. You know, come on. You think I'd do that, really? I mean, how sad would that be?
I mean, you are a man who said he frequented Shoney's Buffets. I feel like this is a step up in 2018 from Shoney Buffets.
Honest to God, I would come here and get the baked spaghetti if we weren't on a remote. Like, I may do it tomorrow, actually, now that I know it's a Wednesday thing. I mean, it's a long way for me to drive out here, but.
So what are they having today?
I didn't ask, but I rode with you today, so I assumed we probably weren't having lunch here.
Oh, you need a ride back, too?
Yeah, if it's cool.
Oh, no, I got things I got to do.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I got things I got to do. I gave you a ride here. I can't give you a ride back, too.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll figure something out. Where are you going for lunch?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. This is a opportunity this weekend for statements. It's an opportunity across the country and really across the NFL. Week 3 is kind of in the NFL, like, hey, this is who you are. There's going to be teams who are at 0-2 trying to make a statement that their season's not done. There's going to be teams like Tampa Bay who are 2-0 with people questioning whether or not they're for real, who want to say, yo, no, we're good. In college football, like, does it not feel like a statement opportunity for Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M? Like, I don't think they have a shot of beating Alabama, right? Like, they're not going to win, but I do feel like if Texas A&M keeps that game close, does that not classify as a statement type of game?
If they play close?
To me, if they lose by 14 or less to Alabama and they have any shot in the second half of making that a game, to me that's a statement from Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M of, hey, just wait a couple years. The help's on the way. I'm a really good coach. We're not going to be outmanned on the sideline. We're going to be able to compete. To me, like, if Texas A&M's even able to be in that game, it's a statement.
Yeah, I suppose that's a good moral victory for this weekend.
I know a lot of people don't believe in moral victories. I do. I thought Texas A&M losing by 2 to Clemson was a moral victory. I think if they can do something somewhat even similar against Alabama on the road, that's another huge building block.
I believe in moral victories. I mean, because if you're playing good teams close, that means you're close. That's what it means to me.
That's the way I look at it.
So, like, it's okay to have a moral victory. Like, you know, looking back, obviously, wouldn't feel this way now in hindsight, but in 2013 when we played that Georgia team close, that was a moral victory to me, and I thought, you know, we'd go beat South Carolina, and then we did.
Does it surprise you that Mississippi State is favored by 10 on the road in Lexington?
That's a weird line to me. I think Mississippi State will probably cover it.
So you think Mississippi State just goes in and rolls them?
Yeah, that series that they've had with Kentucky just last few years, even if Kentucky's having a good year, it just showed to me that has always been the game that has shown the real difference in the East and the West, like in general.
Hasn't Kentucky won the last couple?
I don't think so.
I know the year Mississippi State went, you know, 6-6 or whatever. I feel like they went on a 50-yard field goal. Like, I feel like Kentucky hasn't done so bad against Mississippi State in recent memory.
For some reason, I feel like Mississippi State's just beating the hell out of them. Yeah, last year they beat them 45-7, but 2 years ago, you're right, they did win in Lexington 40-38. So, but every other year has they've pretty much handled them.
Okay.
Mark Stoops has tended to not fare well against Mississippi State, but they did get the one win. So
maybe that's
right.
The only one I remember then is the year that, you know, Dan Mullen and Mississippi State lost to South Alabama, then turned around and lost to Kentucky as well.
That was, 40
the year after
38.
Dak left, I believe.
Yeah, it would have been right in there 2 years ago. So yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like this team, I like Mississippi State in that game. You think that's too many?
No, I mean, I don't know. Because, I mean, Kentucky looks good against Florida, but we've been sitting here saying that Florida's not that good. We're Mississippi State. I mean, they went to Kansas State, looked good.
They've just been beating up on people. I mean, I guess this will be their first conference test, really.
To me, I look at that and put it under our qualification or our category of statement opportunity, because Kentucky can either beat Mississippi State and say, no, we're legit. Or Mississippi State can go on the road, beat up on an SEC opponent, and all of a sudden look like a legit contender in the SEC West. I'm excited to watch that game. I want to see what Mississippi State's, you know, defensive line can do against Kentucky. Now, it stinks because it's right at the same time as Tennessee, Florida, so I won't be able to pay much attention to it. But it is a game in the SEC with two programs who are in interesting situations. They're usually pretty comparable, but it seems like Mississippi State has ascended above where Kentucky can get to, and it seems like Joe Moorhead might be the best coach that was hired this last cycle. Maybe. They haven't missed a beat without Dan Mullen, and Penn State's looked a little bit worse, so maybe Moorhead can go there and just take Mississippi State to new levels. I don't know. Interested to see what the statement is coming out of that game.
Moorhead did take over a pretty good situation there. Gut tells me that they'll go to Kentucky and win. I don't think they'll blow them out in Lexington, but I think Mississippi State will win by 7-10 to, you know, somewhere in there, maybe 14. But, you know, Kentucky they do have stability going for them. I don't think they're ever going to be great, but I do think they're right where they should be with Stoops. I think Mark Stoops is a pretty good coach for them.
Yeah, I mean, they probably have to feel like they have a pretty good opportunity this year, right?
Yeah. I mean, and Kentucky fans, I think, ever expecting to really be more than in contention for the East is kind of unrealistic.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not going to be in contention for the East. Like, that's the thing is, like, it feels like no one's in contention for the East this year.
Well, yeah, no, I know. I mean, I just think on a given year.
I think everyone's rooting for second right now.
Yeah. Well, I think Kentucky, if they could get to second, that's a pretty good year for Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, no, Kentucky would be very happy. Yeah. Kentucky would be very happy with that. I mean, they've almost already accomplished their goal this season of beating Florida.
Beat Florida.
They're able to end that 31-year streak. Like, they feel good. Next two games, though, will tell the tale of the rest of their season, it feels like, with Mississippi State and South Carolina both being at home.
Been a long time since Kentucky won in Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, maybe that's the next thing to check off the list. I would imagine that would be the best season in Kentucky history. Like, throw the Andre Woodson season out. It will pale in comparison to 2018 if they end the streak in Neyland Stadium and against Florida.
I think so, too, because they still didn't even win the East with Andre Woodson. So,
and then Oregon-Stanford, I think, is a good statement game for both of those teams as well.
Is that this weekend?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that
game. You think Oregon's going to win that game?
I do.
Is that in Outzen?
It is.
Stadium? Yeah.
Stanford, two-point favorites. I think Oregon's going to win.
You're big on Oregon this year.
I know. This is their
They're
chance.
Like your Miami for me last year.
It's their chance to make a statement.
I was big on Miami this year, too, so... Oregon, yeah. Have they lost yet?
No, but they haven't played anybody.
Yeah, that's a big game. Big game in the Pac-12.
You think Oregon fans are rooting for UCLA fans? Or for UCLA with Chip Kelly?
Probably not. Because they haven't been nearly as good since Chip Kelly left. I mean, they had the year immediately after, you know, where they made the run to the playoff with Helfrich. But since then... they haven't really been very good, or they haven't been anything to write home about. So I don't see why Oregon fans would pull for Chip Kelly after he left them.
Yeah, I doubt it. All right, let's catch a break. Come back on the other side. It's Talk Sports on Fox Sports Knoxville.
The days are...
Dan Mullen's contract figures released yesterday. Did you see those?
Yeah.
I mean, like, are you lying about that? Like,
I saw that somebody tweeted that, but I didn't really look at them. 6 years. So I didn't know how to answer that.
6 years, $36 million. $36.6 million. Dan Mullen getting a $6.1 million per year salary.
I did see where he... mentioned that they've been playing Rocky Top all week down there. Said by the end of the week he'll be humming it in his head or something.
It would feel nice to be able to lean on a Florida coach. To get the upper hand on a Florida coach.
Yeah. I mean, when's the last time that ever happened?
Steve Spurrier when he was at South Carolina. That feels like the last time you got the upper hand on a Florida coach.
He wasn't even at Florida.
Yeah. That feels like the last time.
Ron Zook. But Rod Zook beat you in the first year, right, in 02. But then you beat him in 03 and 04.
So, yeah, 15 years.
Been a minute.
It'd be nice to just get that off and started like, yep, you, Dan Mullen, you're 0-1 against Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt would be behooved to get off to a good start and say he's 1-0 against Florida. Because like we kind of mentioned earlier, if you missed any of the show, check out the podcast, FoxSportsKnoxville.com, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold / given away. This might be Jeremy Pruitt's best shot to win a rivalry game for a long time. Year one, Neyland Stadium, the worst Florida team that Dan Mullen's probably going to have. Right? Like we expect first year coaches in general to have better teams in year two than year one, right? Like whether or not you think Dan Mullen's any good, you still expect Florida to be better next year, right?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, did we not have that poll question that was, I believe the way it was worded was the three big rivals, are we going to be happy if we go 3-9 against them in the next 3 years?
Yeah.
Florida, Georgia, Bama.
Yeah, because
right?
We added up Yeah, we added up. It wasn't just the. It wasn't just that. It was basically what Butch Jones's record was versus, and included like against rivals.
Yeah.
And you know, is this acceptable for Pruitt in 3 years? And everyone said no. Like 3-9 against your top three rivals. Doesn't feel good.
It doesn't sound acceptable, but when you think about it, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, what is that? Maybe 2 wins over Florida and a home win against Georgia? Like, you might as well ride Alabama off, right? So there's 4 losses in that. I don't know. You hate to think about it that way. I mean, you hope things will change and you get back to a championship level, but.
Well, that's why whenever we've had the discussion of who has more pressure, Mullen or Pruitt, I've always kind of leaned towards Pruitt. Just because of the defeatist mentality we've had for so long, because we've been defeated for so long. Like, if you get off to a bad start against Florida and then you're going to go 0-3 against your rivals in year one, then all of a sudden next year, yeah, you might have a better team than Florida, but you're going to Gainesville, right? And you're going on the road.
Right.
So then
makes
you might,
it tougher.
Yeah, you're potentially looking at 0-6 against your rivals. Then all of a sudden there's a narrative that you can't beat these guys.
Need to get a win here Saturday.
To me, it really feels that way. That way you cannot be looking at a 14-game losing streak in the conference. That way you have you at least lock in a win you can hang your hat on this season. Even if you go 5-7. Hey, yeah, but remember September 22nd? Man, we partied that night. That was fun, wasn't it? National TV getting a big win. Stadium rocking.
Yeah, but then it's going to be like 2016, and we're going to look back, and even if you do beat Florida, you better finish the year well. You know what I mean?
Well, be consistent, because earlier this year, before the season, I asked you if you beat West Virginia and Florida and finished 6-6 versus, you know, winning your last 4 games and finishing 6-6, which one feels better? You can't
you didn't
have it.
Beat West Virginia.
Well, I know this is before the game, and you're just like, oh, if you beat Florida and West Virginia, that's enough to carry you through the rest of the year. So
that's
like,
a different conversation. You didn't beat West Virginia.
Well, yeah, but the Florida game, like,
you can't just beat Florida.
Beating Florida then had a lot of pull. So, like, I do think it still does if you win this game, and even if you do struggle the rest of the year, like I said, and go 5-7, at least hang your hat on that. It's better than going 5-7, hanging your hat over a win over Kentucky or Missouri.
I think if you're going to hang your hat, you got to be 6-6.
Well, I'm just looking at the what if, because the back end of that schedule doesn't seem as easy as it did in the preseason.
I think it could still play out to be pretty manageable.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I still
manageable.
Think it could, and I still think Tennessee could improve to the point. Like, I've already feel like the defense is going to be much improved by the time Kentucky comes, so like, yeah, or by the time Florida comes this weekend. So, yeah, like, I'm not riding off the idea that you can run through November because you're a better team than you are now. Sure.
Like, I'm not necessarily taking Vandy's close game at Notre Dame and saying, wow, talk about a good football team. Like, it's too early in the season to me to make those kind of leaps. Like, I'm not looking at Missouri and Kentucky like, oh, Kentucky beat Florida. We have no shot at beating them. You know what I mean? Like, it's too early. Those teams will phase out. Kentucky and Vandy will start racking up some losses. By the time we get to November, those are still going to be winnable games. Maybe.
When you look at the record against rivals, like I said, if you lose this one, 0-6 seems pretty reasonable, right? And then you've pretty much built up very little equity.
Oh, you mean next 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've built up very little equity by the time year three rolls around. And obviously, year three is going to be make or break for a lot of people.
Well,
it always tends to be.
Well, even year two, though, man, like, we keep saying, you know, we always talk about how great coaches break through in year two. And even if we don't break through next year, the schedule's more manageable. So it's like, if you don't either beat Florida on the road or Georgia at home, which I do think Georgia at home's a lot less likely, but if you don't win either one of those in year two, I think that's a problem.
But there's a road where you lose all three of those and you can still go 9-3.
Yeah. I mean,
or 8-4.
I mean, Mississippi State, BYU.
Right.
I mean,
or 8-4. And like at that point, you're like, wow, a 2 or 3 game jump in year two. Like that's, some people would view that as breaking through. But eventually, like, you're judged by what you do to your rivals. And Jeremy Pruitt said that. And Philip Fulmer said, yep, you know,
right.
Philip Fulmer told Jeremy Pruitt that you're going to be judged at what you do against Florida, Georgia, and Alabama.
At the end of the day.
Right. That's, and I mean, I think that's pretty accurate.
Yep. Fulmer beat two out of three down. Couldn't handle Florida, really. But
hell, I mean, compared to what the last guy does, his record against Florida was good, all things considered.
Yeah. I mean, he at least won a few games against them.
But I think that when you look and you tie this back to the original discussion of is this the biggest game in 10 years, feels like the winner of this game has something to fall back on. And, of course, it means a lot more to Tennessee to win this game than it does Florida. That's fair to say, right?
Yeah.
Just the fact that Tennessee's been starved for wins. Like, a win means more to Tennessee.
And we hate Florida a lot more than Florida hates us, I think.
Because they've beaten us down for so long. That's not how it always was.
Right, but they haven't had nearly as much of a reason to hate us.
Right.
Like they do Florida State or Georgia.
Huge game on Saturday. I know it's 4-7 versus 4-8. But man, stakes seem kind of high when you actually think it through and talk it out.
Especially on National Cheeseburger Day.
Let's talk sports on Fox Sports Knoxville.
48% of young adults.
Last call here at Toyota Knoxville. Again, you have until Thursday to come by, drop off some donations to Hurricane Florence Relief. I know that the storm wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be, but it still did some damage. People are still going to have some clothes that got ruined, going to need some food to eat, and some essentials. Pump the brakes, keep rolling. Cody, was that to go first or second?
You can pick today if you'd like.
Woman's perfect Tinder date with the one shattered.
Stop. Can I hear it again? Do you have time?
I'm really curious as to why this one made national news as I'm reading through this story because I knew you were going to stop.
100%. You say Tinder, 100% stop rate.
I was wondering, like, what makes this one so special? Woman, been messaging a man on Tinder for a couple of months. They finally meet up. He kisses her right when he sees her.
Seems like a weird tactic.
To go for the kiss right when you meet him?
Yeah. Hello, nice to meet you. Nom, nom, nom.
That's passionate.
I don't know. I've never... Is that a kissing sound?
Nom, nom, nom. You've never kissed before?
Well, yeah. But I doubt it was like a... You know what I mean?
He went straight in for the kiss. Laid his palm on her lower back. She said everything was coming together. It was happening. They had a great night out. She went to bed filled with hope for the future. She even thought he could be the one. When she woke up the next day, she looked at her phone hoping to see a message from him, but there was a message from someone else instead. It had 5 words. You want to guess what those words are?
I'm going to kill you.
That would have been a twist. Nope. Got any other guesses?
I'm going to eat you.
Nope. Any other guesses?
Don't eat the brown snow. Or yellow snow.
Probably don't eat the brown one either.
The brown either.
Brown one's probably worse. No, it only said, stay away from my boyfriend.
Ooh. Ooh.
What? How does this become a national story? I feel like this is like everyday occurrences all across the world.
This happens all the time. It happens locally at least 4 times a week.
Yeah, like this doesn't seem like news, but somehow this made national news. Woman goes on Tinder date to find out man on Tinder date is cheating.
Yeah, like what is it?
I feel like that's
half the Tinder dates.
I was gonna say I feel like that's like a 60% likelihood.
That's all the story? I mean nobody dies or anything.
No, that's all the story. The woman was shocked that she had became the other woman.
Oh. Okay. You ever think about how weird kissing someone is?
I've never thought about how weird kissing someone is. Actually, I have.
Like, it's just normal. We've accepted it. It's, you know, we do it as people, but it's a really weird thing. In what other situation would you want to have someone else's saliva in your mouth? It's disgusting. You know what I mean? No, just one of those things we do. Let's see here. Here's a good one for you.
Sorry for the whimper to that end of that story, but I had to deal with it as well.
Well, that happens. Well, here's another story.
I liked yours better. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Here's another story about a couple who, yeah, it really doesn't tie to yours at all, but flight attendant reprimanded for causing chaos on a plane with something to do with boyfriend.
Okay. I'm in. I want to know.
She was fired after her boyfriend proposed to her out of nowhere because it caused a chaos on the plane. So boyfriend proposes. I believe she said yes. People cheered. They were happy. And then she got fired because it created a chaos. Now, I will preface this by saying it was a Chinese airline. A Chinese air hostess has allegedly been fired. So, you know, a little different than American rules probably in general. But the flight attendant said yes. She did say yes. After 4 years, her boyfriend suddenly showed up in front of her mid-flight, got down on one knee, and asked her to marry him. That's a pretty interesting proposal. You know, you actually book a plane ticket on the flight you know your fiance is going to be on. And she's surprised to see you there. And you kneel down all of a sudden and propose to her while she's working. Plot twist, she gets fired.
I mean, I feel like if I showed up at my girlfriend's at work right now and proposed, that would be frowned upon.
She's not going to get fired, though.
She might.
I mean, she can't control you showing up.
No, she won't get fired, but I feel like that guy's overstepping his boundaries. I feel like he's not respecting her job. I feel like if you're going to propose to someone, you don't show up at their work and do it.
Seems kind of romantic to me.
You think it's romantic? Like, hey, I'm working, man. What are you doing?
She's working, but she's, I mean, she's...
There you go. You're not respecting her job either.
She's on a plane.
You're not respecting her job either.
mean, no.
Just like he didn't respect her job.
Well, to me, it's like, I don't know. I mean, what if a girl showed up here right now and proposed to me? I'm working. I just talked to her. Like, I mean, you know.
How would you feel?
Well, I'd probably just bring her on the air. I mean, that's just, you know. I'm trying to do a show here. You're trying to do a show. You know, somebody showed up and got on one knee and proposed, though. I mean, you got to address them.
It'd be entertaining. It's a little bit different if you're in the entertainment business, I guess.
You can't just ignore them, you know?
Well, I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying it's a little disrespectful that he would do that while she's working.
Well, like, I don't know, in my opinion. There's different situations. Like, if she's a brain surgeon and he shows up and doesn't care, that's a little...
Yeah.
That would be frowned upon.
Well, right, why? Yeah. Why? Because you respect the brain surgeon's job. You don't respect the flight attendant.
No, come on.
That's what it sounds like.
No, that's not what I mean. But some jobs you deal with life and death. So, like, if she's, you know, she's a firefighter and she's trying to put out a fire and he shows up there and proposes, that would be frowned upon.
Fortnite's effect on marriage.
Okay. Stop. Now give it to me. Not in the studio.
Online divorce service. Sorry. Online divorce service says Fortnite addiction has been cited in 200 divorce cases.
We got a lot of relationship stories today.
It is National Cheeseburger Day.
That's true.
One of my favorite relationships of all of my life.
Same here.
Relationship to cheeseburgers.
Good point.
200 The company has done some data mining, noticing that the game was being increasingly referenced. Fortnite is all over the news right now as one of the most addictive digital games ever played, but it's not only teenagers that are being affected by its drug-like qualities. It is affecting relationships and marriages, according to research done by divorceonline.co.uk.
Wow.
It is said that digital addictions are now becoming added to the three most common reasons for divorce. Addiction to drugs, alcohol, and gambling. Now, Fortnite being added into it.
That's what I've heard about it. It is an addictive...
So, wait a second.
Basically, that cocaine.
Those are the three most common things?
What, addictions?
Cited in divorce.
What was it?
Drugs, alcohol, and gambling. I would have thought affairs would have been in there.
Yeah, like sex addiction.
No, it wasn't even addiction. It just said being added to three of the most common reasons for divorce.
Drugs, alcohol, and gambling,
I would have thought that affairs were in there. Infidelity.
Over gambling. Probably.
I
mean, drugs and alcohol are pretty, like, rampant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so.
One more relationship story. West Virginia man huffs paint and beats mother with a spatula.
Roll.
Nope. You get what I was saying there? Relationship, West Virginia, like, you know, mother. Like,
oh.
Yeah. Pretty clever, huh? They're basically taking a shot at them after they beat us in week one, going back to the, you know, incest.
It went right over my head.
How could you beat your mom with a spatula? I can't imagine.
Got to hear both sides. Got to hear both sides. What was the mom doing?
Well, he huffed paint.
You
should see this photo. I mean, this is amazing. He's just got a
respect the game.
Respect the damn game.
You asked. Sorry, Ben.
Well, any more stories?
Oh, new story? Okay, let's see. Man ticketed for doing something near Old Faithful. The guys.
Okay. Were, you know. Yeah, I'm in.
Yep. He walked near it at Yellowstone. The man was caught on video wandering close to the geyser where he risked burns from the boiling hot water that erupts every hour or so. Apparently, the man's actions between eruptions startled a crowd of a couple hundred people at the world's most famous attraction. At one point, he laid on the ground near the gurgling hole, so he was like lying there as the water was getting ready to come up. A bunch of the crowd thought he was going to jump in. They didn't know what was going to happen, apparently. The man also appeared to urinate on the guys. Be great if it would have just erupted while he was standing there, you know? Shot him up in the air.
Trey Wallace, Chance Collins up next. It's optional. Stop by Toyota Knoxville with your hurricane relief donations. Good job by you, Ben Lee. Cody, solid. John Reed, phenomenal as always. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.